Okay, thank you. Just a reminder that the synchronicity has three main purposes. It sometimes gives you a warning, sometimes guides you, points you in a certain direction, and sometimes confirms the direction you're in.
So dreams serve the same purpose?
And this, yes, I was going to say that. And it just so happens that dreams do the same, so that's why in Greek mythology, the bringer of dreams, which is Hermes, the one who connects heaven and earth, the messenger from the gods to us and from us to the gods. He's the god of dreams and the god of synchronicity. Because they both do the same thing.
Are all dreams?
She's asking, well, would all dreams be examples of synchronicity? They all are in some way, but when we get to that part of the chapter, we'll talk about the distinction between dreams that have to do with our personal life and dreams that have to do with our larger life. So those are the archetypal dreams.
Can I mention?
But they all have some significance.
Sorry, can I mention? If in the question and answer session, our microphone to pick up your question is over here. Okay, it's listening to everything. So if you could please stand up and speak loudly or signal me and I'll bring the portable mic to you. Okay, thanks.
And I'll just mention one other thing, which is on page 21, number 9. This is where I give various practices of how to open yourself to synchronicity. That most people have some power of premonition or ESP, extrasensory perception. You can pick up on things that are happening. Also, when you're, I noticed this with a client last week. This person was so deep obsessed about someone, about a man, that she starts to pick up on what's going on with him, and she even can sometimes influence, so they'll suddenly call out of nowhere. So the more the more forceful the emotional state, the more likely are you to access your premonitory or extrasensory or telepathic powers. And not everybody has them to the same extent, but everybody has some access to them. And the fact that all this happens in states of high emotion also shows us that something is afoot in our psyche that has an archetypal meaning. An example of an archetypal meaning would be Mary is the personification of a larger archetype that predates her and that has always been known and honored on our planet, which is the divine feminine. And all through history, various goddesses have personified her. To personify this kind of energy. But this energy of the divine feminine is in all people, both men and women. So you're actually having access to the deepest dimension of yourself when you turn to any archetypal power like guardian angel or saint, god, so forth. We'll say more about that as we go along. So you can ask yourself when you noticed that you have these premonitions or ESP. They arise more emphatically when something is brewing within, as I was just saying. And the more attention we pay to the powers, the more do they kick in. That's important. The more you listen, the more you hear. Close yourself off. And if you don't pay attention to dreams, you will hardly remember them. If you start paying close attention to them, you will start remembering more of them. What are these dreams serving? They're arising in the unconscious, the part of us that's not in control, and they're giving us warning, guidance, or confirmation. Okay, so now let's take a look at some specific samples about interpreting synchronicity. And we could say that they sometimes occur in a cluster or series. So let's say you have a series of losses. May mean, because if I didn't say it may mean, if I said it did mean something, I'd be in the ego's world. That's not where this comes from. See, we're not in control of how this happens. A series of losses may mean that it's time for us to let go. That certainly fits what's going on. And it becomes even more spiritual when you look at the words of Master Eckhart. Everything is meant to be let go of, that the soul may stand in unhampered nothingness. That's what the soul wants. It wants to stand in unhampered nothingness, the Buddhist definition of our inner life. What does this nothingness mean? It means it's a spaciousness that can incorporate everything that might happen. So a series of losses may mean it's time to let go, but a series of losses may also be calling us to put in more effort instead of letting go. In fact, every one of these entries that I'll now use could be reversed. Something could mean this is what's meant to be, or it could mean this is what you're meant to be aware of. So I want to really make that point that we're not in control of how this works. Otherwise, it would all be superstition. A series of opportunities obviously goes to it's time to take hold, take charge, get in the driver's seat, do something. Everything is going wrong. Time to step back. Lie low. Let things unfold in their own way. Same old problems keep arising. This shows you that you haven't worked them through. So there's something to be worked through so it can be resolved. Otherwise it wouldn't keep arising. I certainly notice this next one as I get older. And I'm sure many of you do too. Suddenly have memories of childhood or remember little events. Wonder, where did this come from? But I do notice it happens more now than, say, when I was in my 20s or 30s. A series of memories coming up, and they all, they're about various family members. And what I've been doing is, like, what is the theme of the memories? The theme of the memories for me is noticing little ways that the family members showed love and I didn't notice it. Isn't that fascinating? They all have that in common. When you have a series of memories coming up, what you want to do is look at the memories and ask yourself, what's the central theme, the similar message coming through in all these memories? Just in my case, it happens to be I noticed little ways that they showed a loving kind of motivation, and I just never noticed it. It's a weird thing to think of something that happened 50 years ago and suddenly realize what it meant. It takes that long. So the series of memories points to what you need to learn in the moment or grieve. So now, a series of similar events, so a series of synchronicities, may mean losses, may mean letting go, opportunities may mean taking hold, or it could be, although it would be less likely, that it isn't about the losses aren't about letting go, they're about putting in more effort. And the simple way to tell is you try it out. Put in more effort and it works, then that must be the way to go. Put in more effort and you're just spinning your wheels, then time to try something altogether different. You see how this would enlist a part of us that isn't in control. It enlists something beyond the ego. That's why synchronicities have kind of an eerie feeling, because they're coming from a part of us that we're not familiar with, described as eerie, because you can't quite put your finger on what's happening, and it seems like it's preternatural, it's coming from a source that's beyond nature, natural course of events. Okay, any questions about this part? Okay, so let's just remind ourselves, I want to use that example of Master Eckhart just for a minute. Let's say you have a series of losses. And you're somehow getting the message that I need to let go. Go with the losses. When I make the decision to go with what is happening, to sit in the saddle in the direction the horse is going, rather than try to go the other way, when I do that, I have made my life a synchronicity. I have turned it into a meaningful coincidence, because I'm doing what the events are pointing to.
Maybe Jesus did that in a more passionate
way. Yes, continual letting go. And this experience, so let's say the losses are physical, like I'm having one illness after another, and in each case the doctor doesn't have a lot of hope for me, or they could be psychological. I'm having a series of breakdowns in which I just can't manage my life as well as I used to, and this is not related to addictions. But these losses I'm working with, I'm going with them, I'm noticing them, and I'm saying I want the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. When I say that, then I am doing something that corresponds with my condition. So my predicament becomes my path. And when I went along with that by saying yes to that which I cannot change, remember Jung's statement, an unconditional yes to the givens of my existence without protest or blame. when without protest I surrender to that which I cannot change, and I say yes in that way, I have connected my predicament to my path. So I have become synchronicity. Now, the spiritual will always be the over-the-top version, also called transcendent, the over-the-top version of what we're doing psychologically and physically. So if what's happening is a series of losses physically or psychologically, and I'm doing my letting go physically and psychologically, I can also presume that there's a spiritual dimension to the physical and the psychological. And the mystics have usually told us exactly how to interpret our physical and psychological experiences in a spiritual way. So here you have Master Eckhart, Dominican mystic of medieval times, who says, but wait a minute, everything is meant to be let go of. Because at the end, of course, we're just going to be buried with nothing, we can't take anything with us. So everything is obviously meant to be let go of on a physical level. Then he's saying, well, everything is meant to be let go of. The first half sounds like it fits with this. Oh, I have to let go of some of my hearing, I have to let go of some of my eyesight, I have to let go of some of the way I used to move in the world, I have to let go of some of my control over how I manage my life. So the first half of the statement sounds like just this. Everything is meant to be let go of. But when we come to the second part of the statement, that's where we discover the spiritual dimension. Everything is meant to be let go of so that the soul can stand in unhampered nothingness, so that there will be nothing left of me except an inner space to be filled in whatever way the divine wants to fill it, that I could be that kind of open person, reminding me of the question that St. Margaret Mary asked to Jesus when he made the revelations of his Sacred Heart. And she said to him, why did you choose me to bring this devotion to the world? I have so little to offer. He said, yes, it's you are a vessel of space, so there was room for me. That's why I chose you. So this vessel of space that reflects the space being left by the physical and psychological losses has a bigger meaning, and this bigger meaning is the soul, the part of us that's beyond ego, is finally getting its chance to be what it was always meant to be. What was always meant to be? Utterly open. Not filled in with definitions, judgments, plans. Having nothing at all except a radical spaciousness that allows the entry of whatever the divine may look like in your personal life. This is what's meant by seeing the spiritual side of your experience. And this goes not only with losses and let go, this goes with everything that we just listed. Everything has another spiritual meaning that will be bigger than just what we might get psychologically and spiritually. This is why psychology will never get us the whole way. Because it doesn't enter into this other sphere. It doesn't even believe there is another sphere. Everybody follow?
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Christine.
Hi, Dave. It brings up a question that I read Ken Wilber's, the book Ken wrote after his wife died.
Yeah.
And she had a journal, and she said she was struggling with, she was a psychologist and very spiritual. She also was dying of cancer, breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, how do I reconcile surrender with fighting for my life?
Mm-hmm.
So at which point do you seek treatment? Do you seek which treatment to seek? And how do you know you are refusing to surrender?
Mm-hmm. Very good point.
How would the person answer that question?
So she's saying, do I surrender or do I do everything I can to change it? This is where our prayer comes in. Give me the courage to change the things I can change, the serenity to accept what I can't change. So you do all you can to change what is. And when you realize that, oh, this is as far as I'm going to be able to go for now, that's when we pause and go to the serenity of surrender. I see them as working back and forth, but you are reminding me of a poem by Emily Dickinson in which she speaks to this very directly. When a tree is ill, this is our style in New England, or has been in the past. This poem was written in Massachusetts. If it has an illness that the tree surgeon can't cure, they cut a ring all the way around the tree to prevent it from getting further nourishment, so it'll just die on its own. You need that information.
No,
they just cut around the
access to nutrients.
Yeah. Death is like the insect menacing the tree, competent to kill it, but decoyed maybe. Bait it with the balsam, seek it with a knife, battle if it costs you everything in life. Then, if it has burrowed out of reach of skill, ring the tree and leave it. 'Tis the vermin's will. So you do all you can. When you notice, oh, it's beyond the type of skill that we have now, then you just let go. Otherwise you're acting contrary to the message that's trying to come through. Message coming through, lost, so let go. David?
I have an experience of the question Christine asked. In my late 40s, I had cancer. And so went to three, my husband insisted we go to three different doctors and places. And one doctor that I went to just looked at me and said, well, we don't really know what we're doing with Hodgkin's right now. We're experimenting, so if you want to be an experiment, continue with what we're saying. But he said to me, what caused that cancer? And I never thought of that. And all at once came out of my mouth was anxiety over my children. And he said, well, go home and take care of it. So I went home and I thought, well, how do I take care of it? But
a series that
I knew step by step, and I was, it was taken care of.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you, Jim. That's very helpful.
But it was annoying, and I was down to 90 pounds, and my husband said, no, you've got to do the traditional. And I knew it inside me, and I think that's when the surrender, or for me it happened, is when I absolutely knew within my heart that I knew what to do. I didn't know up here what to do, but I knew within me, and eventually it took me a year and a half.
Good example. So you trusted your body to give you the information about how it would heal itself. And the mind followed suit.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't letting go.
Yes. Hi, John.
I got a strong voice, so I don't need the microphone.
Okay.
Several things. All this the synchronicity and speaking to the spiritual. Scriptures, one of the scriptures scholars I've been reading, using it in preparing homilies, he talks often about an altered state of consciousness, dreams, visions, and so on. Our first reading last Sunday from Acts was Paul coming back to Jerusalem, and he's a changed man. He had gone out breathing fire and brimstone, and now he's back and he's engaging in the Christian community and the followers of Jesus, and it was a radical change. What changed him was synchronicity of his vision. It occurred at a moment when he was open and didn't know it.
Yes.
And we all experience in one way or another at different times, I feel, these altered states of consciousness. It's a kind of a scientific way of looking at it. But we're in a very scientific society. And as a society, I mean, with Paul, nobody commissioned an investigation of his vision. Because that was a society which accepted these things happen. They are real. And for me, a classic example of synchronicity is I was about ready to depart from active ministry, and Wednesday night we had the novena to Our Lady of Perpetual Help. And we had it every Wednesday night, so it wasn't a novena anymore, it was a perpetual novena. But my prayer that night, and I had the strangest feeling as I was saying it, I need something that tells me, yes, this is the way you go. I don't know for sure. I was floundering. The next morning, I got a letter from the bishop saying, when you receive this, pack your bags and go. I went. I have never had to look back. It's dangerous.
All right, any final questions, G?
Well, back to the comment about cancer, whether to fight it or resign yourself to it. I'm in that situation, of course. But I was thinking the part about the internal position is probably the part that resonates the most with me. Because it's like, I don't care what the doctors say or what other people say. It's sort of like, what do I want? What do I think? I think that inner physician is the one who guides me the most.
Yes.
And it's like a very a state of peacefulness and comfort that I'm comfortable with my decisions back and forth with this physician.
Yeah. Good example. Keith, you know our old friend Bob Stott.
Yes.
And when he was dying, he said something very interesting to our monk. He said, you know what I've noticed is my body knows how to die. Mm-hmm. It's just doing it, and I just kind of go along with it because the time has come. It knows how to do this. You don't have to learn something. Not interesting. Okay, any final? Jody?
Yeah, I just wanted to see if you could. I'm
trying
to touch on the soul, but
okay, soul is described by Jung as the point of connection between your conscious life and your unconscious. He calls this space where they meet the soul. The soul has many meanings. I think to Master Eckhart, it would mean anything that's beyond your ordinary ego consciousness. So that would be what we've been calling the inner self, the higher self, the wise self that knows something that the ego can't explain. So, Ginny, you were accessing that wise self when you say, "I just knew." So statements like that, "I just knew," or "I suddenly realized," or "I just had a sense," is the same as I somehow opened my controlling ego enough so that moment came when I could hear the voice that's always speaking but is continually being drowned out by our own thoughts. So there's something inside that's saying something to you, but as long as you're caught in the ordinary round of thinking, as we all are, then we don't hear it. Something like in the poem from the poem I recited at the beginning. So I'll recite it again now, and you'll hear it in a new way. And when it ends by saying, "We cannot hear it," now we know what that means. It means that this soulful voice is continually trying to come through. And where does it come? It comes from deep in nature. It comes from deep in ourselves, also called the Holy Spirit. It's interesting that in the Basilica of St. Francis in Assisi, there is a statue of St. Francis. The title of the statue is "St. Francis Honoring the Holy Spirit." But the interesting thing about the statue, remember, it's St. Francis honoring the Holy Spirit. Instead of looking up, he's looking down at the earth. Mm-hmm. See, they had that realization that, oh, this is where the voice comes from. And it kind of fits with the Oracle of Delphi, because the voice of Apollo came from under the earth. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, let's hear this speech from Shakespeare one more time, and this time we will really appreciate it at a deeper and richer level. And then for next week, please read the next two chapters, which would be 2 and 3. "How sweet the moonlight sleeps upon this bank. Here will we sit and let the sounds of music creep into our ears. Soft stillness and the night become the touches of sweet harmony. Sit, Jessica. Look how the floor of heaven is thick inlaid with patterns of bright gold. There's not the smallest orb which thou beholdst, but in his motion like an angel sings, still choiring to the young-eyed cherubim. Such harmony is in immortal souls. But whilst this muddy vesture of decay doth grossly close it in, we cannot hear it." Mm-hmm. Thank you all.